Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. An acclaimed composer of modern gospel music will be in Milwaukee this weekend. Ron Harber helped compile the African-American Catholic hymnal Lead Me, Guide Me. He's spent his career exposing others to gospel through workshops and his work as director of liturgy and music at the Franciscan School of Theology in Berkeley, California. Speaking by phone, Harber told Lake Effect's Amy Kiley about his early exposure to gospel.
I grew up in the Black Baptist Church, so of course gospel was the music that I grew up with. I met the Catholic Church later in my life, in my 20s, but the music that fed me, the music that I began to write, was predicated upon the music that I had learned as a child, which was gospels and spirituals as well. So whatever I'm writing generally for the church is usually gospel, though as a musician, university-trained musician, I can write in many different genres, but I usually write in the gospel style since I feel that's a need in our church.
Does that indicate any specific notes, like the blues notes, or when we hear your music, how do we know that it's gospel?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I've never even considered it before, but I think when you hear gospel, you begin to hear the rhythm. Usually we clap on 2 and 4. There's also some dynamic about it as well. It's usually a very improvisatory, and it has, when one says one sings in a gospel style, it's improvisatory and very individualistic as well. The faith, the spirit of the person comes through, usually singing about God and Jesus, but not always, because we have that same style and rhythm and blues, of which gospel music is a part of, just the whole history of music in the United States.
What are some compositional challenges of taking music that might come from an oral tradition or from improvisation and trying to put that on a page?
Ah, yes. There are some techniques that one uses. And when you're placing it on paper, the paper tends to set it in stone. And most of the time, the performance practice of a piece of gospel music is not the written practice. It's almost impossible to write that music on a piece of paper. Nobody could read it, for one thing. We would it would be very, very complicated. So as I was saying before, it's really pretty individualistic, and the person sings from within themselves. So they shape and bend those written notes in such a way that we usually identify it as gospel music.
You've talked a number of times now about the individual in the music making. Is that why your music seems to heavily feature solo singing?
Well, my music is based upon the psalm in the Catholic liturgy, and that is almost always sung exclusively by one person or a cantor, sometimes a choir, but most of the time a cantor. But within gospel music, there is the characteristic of call response. Usually the person who is leading, if it's not a psalm, or even if it is a psalm on the refrain, that person is going to be leading the community of people. They are urging the congregation to be even more involved. And what they do is many times decides on how successful a piece of music can be. That leader is very important in call and response.
In an interview with the Catholic Voice, you talked about going to a segregated college. What was that like, and how did it influence your work and your style?
I was privileged to go to Furman University there in Greenville, South Carolina. I was one of 7 African Americans who entered the year in 1968. I came with a pretty strong musical background, and instead of majoring in piano or majoring in voice, I decided to major in theory and composition, which analyzed everything that I did that I had done prior, but I could also analyze what I was being introduced to. You know, as a piano student in high school, I played Beethoven and Rachmaninoff and Bach and all the other wonderful composers, but at church, I played James Cleveland and several of the other gospel people as well. It's an oral tradition. I was always between the two worlds. I also went home every weekend, so I was able to stay in touch with my gospel, black, cultured background, spiritual as well, background, and it was a good, wonderful thing. It was good and wonderful. And so I can work within the two worlds quite easily, which is why I can work at the Franciscan School of Theology and remain musically satisfied. Because on the weekends, I'm at St. Columba Catholic Church there in Oakland, California, where we sing a variety of music, and it's a really good place to be.
What went into creating the African-American Catholic hymnal, Lead Me, Guide Me, and what does it mean for the music and the people it represents?
It was Archbishop James P. Like who initiated the project back in 1984, and it was Leon Roberts and Marjorie Gabriel Burrow. Leon from Washington, D.C., of which I was from as well, and Marjorie from Detroit. What the Archbishop did was that he introduced us to a lot of different hymnals, American hymnals as well as African hymnals, Hispanic hymnals, as many as we could almost bear. And then he would fly us to be together because we weren't in the same city. We did a lot of telephone calling, but many times we just had to sit and work with each other to go through, play through all of the hymns that were set before us. And then it came to a point where there was seasonal psalms needed to be done. So the Archbishop sent Leon Roberts and I to Chicago, to St. Sabina Catholic Church, where we simply, all that we had to do during our 3 weeks there was write music for the psalms. So it took a lot of wherewithal and time and lots of plane rides and telephone calls to pull this together, and the people truly appreciated it. They had published only 50,000 copies in the first edition, which came out in 1987. They very soon had to republish another set of 10,000, and it went on from there. Wonderful sales and wonderful response to that hymnal for a long time.
And what do you think that response means about the music and means about the people it represents?
Oh, it definitely meant that the African-American Catholic in both society and especially in the church had come of age to set itself on paper, to put itself legitimately in musical and liturgical forms. And I can't tell you the number of workshops that Leon and Marjorie and I did around the country. And these were workshops where we received the invitation from the general parishes of the dioceses, where people were just ecstatic, Amy, about what this meant to them. It really, really set the African American Catholics' contributions to the Catholic Church in terms of music and liturgy and culture as well. They were ecstatic.
What do you think about using music and liturgy to transcend boundaries? And do you seek that broad reach with your own composing?
Oh, we always do go across boundaries. There are many times when I simply don't think about my pieces of music when we're planning liturgy at the Franciscan School. And someone will say, well, why don't we sing your Psalm 63, for instance? And I'll say, oh, yeah, that's right. I did write that because I'm usually not the best self-promoter. We don't have any, unfortunately, we don't have any black students there at the Franciscan School. And so the people who are there are Korean and German, They are from Italy and from South America and from all over the United States. And this music has really touched them in various and sundry spiritual ways that they say yes to. And when I travel the country, like when I'm in Milwaukee this weekend, there will be many people who are not African-American but who love the music that we're doing and the way in which we're doing it as well. So it transcends, as most African-American music has done. Look at rhythm and blues. It's loved by black folk, and it's loved by white folk, and it's loved by Hispanics as well, and it's just music that's generally loved. So the universality of music truly does bring people together. It's the one place where we can just simply be ourselves.
Since you do those workshops to help people learn about gospel music, can you give some quick tips for performing or listening to gospel music?
Well, some quick tips would be to go on a website like YouTube, put in a song title, and just look at, listen to all of the different ways in which groups of people can sing one song. And that's why earlier I was talking about the performance practice of a piece. The written practice of music is not always the way it's performed. And that it will give you some insights into your limitations and your freedoms in doing this kind of music as well. And when we sing it in public, I believe you were asking, it's always sung from an individual sense of the spirit within the person, and it's sung with conviction as well. And if that isn't heard in the music, when the director is listening to what's going on, he or she will ask for that, and you can do something over and over and over again. Many times gospel music is done orally. In other words, instead of reading the music, we simply hear the music and you sing it back to the conductor. We're going to do several pieces like that in Milwaukee. And after a while, the piece gets set inside your head and it becomes your own. So the expectation is always you sing it as though it's happening right now and it's real to you. The immediacy of gospel music is like no other in church.
Ron Harver, thank you for your time and good luck with your workshop this weekend.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be at St. Francis of Assisi.
Noted gospel composer Ron Harber will give a workshop at St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Milwaukee tomorrow. Information is at wuwm.com/Lake Effect. Harber spoke with Lake Effect's Amy Kiley. That's another week's worth of Lake Effect shows produced by Dan Harmon, Stephanie Lecce, and Bonnie North with the able assistance of Amy Kiley and Eleanor Peterson. John Strelecki is our studio engineer. I'm Mitch Tyke. Have a terrific weekend, and I hope we'll be a part of it. Lake Effect Weekend comes your way at 3 o'clock Saturday and Sunday afternoon on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.